Rotwooded Radio presents award-winning author John Neufeld with Side Effects.
Not necessarily fatal, the COVID-19 virus. True enough, we haven't a handle on it yet, but we are fighting back. Our troops are legions of medical talent of all kinds, for which each of us is unfailingly grateful and in need, should it come to that for any of us. We have managed to incorporate this virus into our daily lives, our planning, our parenting, our travel, our work. Remarkably, we have Congress to thank for the relief and our ability for most of us to sleep at night. It is that membership that rushed to the barricades with weapons, medical, food, income to keep us from the streets. For the first time in years, Congress has stayed on it and passed other measures as it saw what worked and what didn't, who was being assisted and who was still forgotten. Generously and not modestly, we are ignoring Mitch McConnell and his ilk, and like most adult Americans, we have not assigned blame for this pandemic on any one or any two people as creators of death, illness, and fear. This cannot be said for individuals who have worked to maintain not only social distancing, but more importantly, limiting further social access to health, education, and welfare. This social tsunami has led, almost inevitably, to the epidemic we witness on our television screens nightly, from coast to coast. Protests that imagine themselves peaceful, even as, when more complete darkness arrives, they degenerate into looting, fires, random gunfire, helicopter hazing, courtesy of the U.S. government, the appearance on once peaceful streets, in once peaceful neighborhoods, of military machinery requested and then directed once again by our national leadership. The impetus for this state of near anarchy comes from the simple fact that people of color have become the favorite victim of the virus already mentioned. Statisticians have had 5 months to tell us what we already knew. People of color suffer most from hunger, illness, homelessness, unemployment, and poverty. And in those 5 months, these figures have been incorporated into the consciousness and final history of the very people they try to assess. Newspapers and cable channels have re-educated all of us. For 5 months, we've been living on tinder-dry mountainsides. We also managed, in those months, to field strip our cigarettes, until one man got careless in Minneapolis. The conflagration he ignited, along with his cohorts, exposed to the nation at large, white and black and brown and others, the unspoken conditions of life for millions. Not that these were unknown. The nation was too comfortable and too embarrassed to admit to them. They worked against the image of our country we struggled until recently so hard to maintain in the eyes of the rest of the world. Add to them the then sure and certain likelihood that they were unlikely to change. And Tuesday afternoon in New York City, we saw a gigantic surge of shame. Monday night, we watched well-intended and empathetic gatherings of millions across the country, not only mourning an unnecessary death in Minneapolis a week ago, but also marching to save their own memories of what had once been, albeit perhaps fictionally, the land of the free and brave. Alas, not everyone in those crowded streets of Denver and Phoenix and Sacramento was sentimental and well-intended. Hence, the military, state by state. Which leads us directly to the most debilitating and frightening virus of them all, a loss of personal freedom, a loss of republicanism with a small r, the loss of our democracy. Here, it is clear who held the syringe and injected fear of the other into our veins. Despite the public warnings of pundits, politicians, and ordinary voters, what was feared in 2016 has come to pass. We elected an uneducated, illiterate egomaniac to the presidency and then held our noses and our otherwise alert and astute senses of right and wrong, hoping against hope that others wiser and more experienced would save him and us from needing to combat King George. But as Dear One grew into his own peculiar understanding of his new job, he jettisoned each and every previously experienced and valuable advisor. What this king wanted was loyalty, period. Nothing more. No advice, no counsel, no help. And after being impeached but not removed from high office, Dear One understood, as a lot of other elevated personalities did, there was nothing between him and immortality, which, on our dime, he's going to get. Metaphorically, we are damned to watching Nero fiddle. Ah, but wait! There's more! Establishing His Holiness, Dear Leader visited two religious institutions, one on Monday night, St. John's Episcopal Church, and on Tuesday, a Catholic shrine erected to memorialize the life of Pope John Paul II. What matters here is not the images of a deeply secular man, and eventually his wife, using as backdrops for his coming campaign landmarks sacred to D.C.'s voters, and hence to millions of others around the world. What matters is his conviction that he was royally entitled to go where he chose, do what he wanted, say whatever came to mind, which fortunately was nothing. Not that speaking at each stop would have helped him at all. The noise from overhead helicopters, flash grenades, smoke bombs, sloganeering and chanting would have swamped him entirely. Better yet, and this is worth some consideration, since he had nothing encouraging or soothing to say, he said nothing, which is a first. The days of riding across the country, most particularly in our nation's capital, and Dear One's inability to control it, may have helped persuade millions watching that he was not only unqualified for his current occupation, but also that the likelihood of expecting an improvement in his perception of democracy was going to happen. Unfamiliar with our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our history, Dear One is finally in too deeply to back out now. He's committed to going forward under armed protection, which in his imagination probably means a coronation in November. He's unlikely to want to wait until January 21. Like horrifying scenes from some distant Mideast conflict, all that was missing from D.C. in the past 3 days has been the trails of American refugees fleeing for the quiet and safety of the surrounding countryside. That isn't going to happen. Just as Americans united against COVID-19 to halt its deadly progress state by state, just so finally, we believe, Americans may be moved to realize once and for all the dear one is the disease, not the cure. Whether the fear and distaste of watching 24/7 television of riots and marchers conjoined into what looks increasingly like anarchy, Americans are in a bipartisan mood. They are united in the sense of disgust at what they see and at its major players. They are angry that the underlying causes of this new violence are not being addressed in any positive way. They positively pine for regime change. For most, November can't come soon enough. By that time, COVID-19 might be mortally wounded. First steps in righting 400 years of slavery may have been taken, and the probability that dear one is knee-deep in civil lawsuits grows with every harebrained scheme he concocts. Which is to say, despite the shaming of our nation by this one man and his paid-for allies who are pinned to his sleeve in order to maintain their own lifestyles and influence, there is, perhaps for the first time since 2016, real hope of progress back to influence, goodness, bipartisan government, and honest pride that although we were brought low by an irrational spasm, we really and truly are coming back. I'm John Neufeld.
All opinions on side effects are those of John Neufeld and do not represent necessarily the opinions of Robinhood Radio, robinhoodradio.com, CATV6, or any of the employees, volunteers, or underwriters of Tri-State Public Communications.